Greetings from Polymancer. This is episode 1 of the Dicecast. We would like to take this opportunity to wish all of you the very best for the holiday season and for the coming new year. Running time for this episode is approximately 34 minutes. Yes, it really is episode 1. Our first episode was 0.
In episode 1, we discuss character generation.
So today we will talk about creating characters, and I guess for a lot of listeners who are coming to Dicecast, obviously this is a gaming podcast. However, what we're going to talk about today, a lot of it can be used if you are a writer and you are looking to create characters that are interesting.
Now you're talking about if you're a writer of fiction.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, if you are playing role-playing games, what you're looking for is to create interesting characters, just like a writer wants to create interesting characters that people will want to read about. And in a way, you're sort of creating some entertainment for your fellow players and for the game masters, and together you're sort of creating a story. So a lot of what we're going to talk about today is stuff that you would hear from anyone talking about creating characters for a novel, for a short story, or even for a TV show, because I think a lot of interesting ingredients when creating characters for an RPG is to, well, look at what TV shows are doing and basically see if you can't emulate some of the strategies that they do, right?
Certainly, people who create characters for fiction, whether it's for printed fiction or for the screen, they are well practiced at creating endearing characters. That's what makes a story that's endearing over time. That's what makes a TV show that people still want to watch years and years later. And really, similar strategies could or should be used when you're creating a character for a role-playing game. So let's get down to it. What's the first thing?
Well, first thing is coming up with a clear concept of what your character is. While some people might have a different take on what a concept is, I guess what you might want to consider a concept is what is the basic archetype that your character is based on, and how essentially are you twisting it around, creating something new out of it? Essentially, what is your character about? And I guess, you know, if you can answer that question with a simple word or a single word, then you know that you're getting close to creating a memorable character. Like, for instance, what is your character about? You're Hulk. Well, your character might be about anger management. If you try to come up with a word that could sort of define what your character is, then you're on the right track, I guess. In other words, just don't create a character that is just an archetype, like the bad guy that just kicks a dog because he's evil or something. Just create a character. There must be a reason why he's that way. In terms of, like, story writing, I guess that's really important. You don't want to create something that's two-dimensional, right?
Okay, well, the late Kurt Vonnegut wrote an essay on...
Why was he late?
Late as in he died recently. He wrote an essay on several rules to follow when you're writing a short story. I think there was a top 10 in there. And one of the rules in there was every character, no matter how minor, should want something, even if it's only a glass of water, in his rules. Basically, what makes a character what it is motivation. What the character wants. What makes the character go.
And I guess one thing that you can look at in terms of the source of your character's motivation is the character's background, and creating an interesting background story that sort of explains what the character is about and why he does the thing he does is kind of important. Essentially, where he's been and where he's coming from. I mean, do you have any comments on what would make an interesting background for a character?
Okay, well, background is sort of one of those issues in character generation that makes a lot of gamers cringe. We all know the guy who came to the gaming table with a character that he generated and wrote 3 to 5 pages of background story about this guy. Some people like that, some people hate it. It really depends on what kind of game that you're playing. A really long background is not necessarily a good background because, well, for one thing, a lot of people, when they write these things, they're repetitive, but that's another story. See, the background that you write should be something that explains what's on the character sheet. If you write your background before you generate your character, it might constrain the character generation process, like depending on how flexible the rules are. Now, some game systems are better than this than others are in their character generation rules. On the other hand, if you write your character's backstory after you've already created it, there's a drawback to this if the game system you are using doesn't give you so many options, or if you're not so experienced with this particular rule system, or if you're given to always creating the same kind of character to begin with. If all your ability scores are always in the same range, you always have the same abilities and skills, and you always choose the same character class if the game system you're using uses those, then your backstory is probably going to be the same from character to character too if you always write the backstory after generation. So, what is a good thing to do is to come up with the general concept, the general archetype. Then you answer a few basic questions. First thing you gotta do is come up with your basic character concept, what your character's basic archetype is like, where the character came from, and how that character became this type of character, how you became a fighter, how you became a wizard, how you became a detective, or what have you, and the character's basic motivations, back to what I said earlier about Vonnegut, what that glass of water that he wants is. After you've come up with that, it's a good idea to generate the character, keep those points in mind while generating the character, and let those points motivate the choices that you make, the abilities you choose, merits and flaws, advantages and disadvantages, feats, what have you, all depending on which game system you like to use. And then when that's over, you take a look at all the skills you chose, all the abilities, and all the general characteristics that your character has, and then you decide, how did he become so strong? How does his high IQ score, or low IQ score, as the case may be, how's that affected the way he relates with other people? Now take all the abilities that are on the character sheet, and come up with an explanation for how the character got this ability. Who taught him how to fight with a sword? How did this character get such great reflexes? How has the character's high intelligence or very low intelligence affected his relationships with other people? Your character sheet says that your character has a very strong will. Okay. Does that mean he's stubborn? Does that mean he's stoic? Does that mean he just doesn't give a damn about things? These are things that you need to know. These are things that you need to write down, and if you do that, you will create a more full-bodied character.
An interesting thing you can also do is focus on the small skills on your sheet, those that aren't really your major skills, but the ones that might be a little bit off for your character to have. For instance, if you have a fighting character who happens to have an interest in ballet, how did your character end up having an interest in ballet?
Well, it's notable that the late Bruce Lee, and late, I mean dead, did at least observe or read books about ballet to study their high foot movements.
And there you have it. Bruce Lee's dead.
I know.
Damn. Okay. Personality. Personality is another big thing for a character. It's good to have a character sheet with stats and numbers and to have a good idea of what your character can and cannot do in your gaming world, but it's also a good idea to have a good background and to know what your character did in his life or he picked up the skills he did, but your character really is all about the character's personality. Personality goes a long way, and you kind of need to have a character that will stand out from the other people in your party because of the way he talks, because of the way she does things, because of the way that their character approaches life. And that is perhaps the most important thing you can do when creating a character, is to determine what is the basic personality of that character.
These things can be summarized pretty quickly. If you've ever gone to a convention and you met this guy who's always twirling a pen and shoves it behind his ear and always has his nose in a book. Those are the things that people use to distinguish that person from everybody else. This is the sort of thing that we're talking about when we say personality, right?
Well, that's just mannerism. There's a difference between personality and your mannerism, and I think a lot of people
mix those two up.
One of the things that differentiate perhaps a character from another character is the way that this character reacts in a given situation that the other character might not react in the same way. If somebody faces a challenge, he may react in a very thoughtful way, perhaps welcome the challenge, and our character with a different personality might actually be more upset, might actually be a little bit more aggressive towards this challenge. It's the whole issue of, do you actually try to untie the Gordian knot, or you just cut it through? What type of personality you are? Is your character really centered on just obtaining the goals no matter what? How does that fit with the character's ethics? And essentially, how does that fit with how your character reacts in any given situation? Is your character the type of character that will willfully throw himself and take the bullet for his fellow gamers? Is he actually hiding behind the lines? Will he actually abandon the party? How does your character really react and get in various situations? How does that fit too with his personality, his background? And those are very important things to have. The other thing, besides behavior and the way your character acts and reacts to things that happen in the game world or in the storyline, if you're just writing about, if you're making a story, is what does the character say or do? Some characters have very distinct speech mannerisms. They won't say the same things the same way that another person can. I guess one classic example is Captain James T. Kirk and his ability to pause at various moments. Of course, you have to watch out when you're coming up with mannerisms or ways or accents, and you should probably stay clear of accents if you can't do them. And it's because it could actually get irritating for the other players. So another way that you can...
Also, if I can just interject here, if you choose a kind of voice that's very harsh, and...
Unless you're doing some Yakuza RPG and everybody goes, ah, yada!
Well, yeah, but if you do that all the time, you're going to have a sore throat after role-playing for 4 hours.
Yes, and a sore face if you get on the other player's nerves.
That too.
But one way that you can differentiate the way that your character sounds towards all the other characters in the party is by carefully choosing the words that your character uses. If your character has a high education, perhaps he will use words a little bit more complicated than more esoteric, perhaps, than someone who's simply a meat shield and just uses a basic vocabulary. Choosing the vocabulary that would fit with your character is perhaps one way of making your character different from all the other characters in the party, while not necessarily going for something as obvious and blatant as an accent or a high-pitched voice. Also, the way that you express yourself as this character is also important. If you're the type of character that likes to poke fun at other people or make snide or snarky comments, you can easily try to do that. If, however, your character is the considerate or intellectual type, the one who only talks when he really has something important to say, then perhaps refraining from giving snarky comments, even though you as a player would like to make it, you know, just for a joke, that will help creating a sense of who your character is with respect to the other characters. And perhaps when your character, who seldom speaks, suddenly makes a snarky comment against the other character that is just getting on everybody else's nerves, then that would actually make it all that much more interesting or a more interesting exchange. The other aspect of personality is also how does your character react to other characters and other personality types. If you're the type of character that doesn't like people full of hot hair, then perhaps if you have the character that keeps talking as if he has been everywhere and he's an amazing, perhaps you would find this character, it could be a party member, it could be an NPC, you could find this character annoying and perhaps react negatively towards this person. Why just leave your character or your reaction roles determine how you react to people when you could just easily just write down ahead of time, perhaps even part of your background, what type of characters that your character likes, dislikes, distrusts, or simply just has a loathing for. And that alone is enough to give your character a very distinct personality. And that is what our role-playing is about. It's really giving playing out your character and having make sure he has an interesting personality that you can roleplay.
Now that we've spoken so much about character personality and developing one, and also the character's motivations, keep in mind that none of this is set in stone. After all, it's just written on paper. But seriously, what this means is that throughout the game, your character is going to experience new things, meet new people, come into different situations, and form ties with other people or break ties with people. Motivations are going to change, and the character's personality is going to change over time.
And that's what people usually refer to as character development?
Yeah, and in movies or also in fiction, it's sometimes called an arc. The most classic example, and maybe it's a little bit hokey, is that of Anakin Skywalker. Star Wars episodes 1 and 2, he's a hero. By the end of episode 3, he's evil. He becomes Darth Vader. That's just one example. Another example from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, in the first couple of seasons, Benjamin Sisko hated being on Deep Space Nine and really hated his position. By season 3 or season 4, he was more settling into the role and understanding how important his duty was. And once we hit season 5 or later, he was basically Bajoran at that point.
That's right. But there's only one thing that you have to watch out when you're giving, you know, advice like this, is that you should warn people maybe that there are spoilers ahead. Like, some people out there might not have seen Star Trek Deep Space Nine or know that Darth Vader was going to turn to the dark side. You should take something more neutral, like, Soltai is a Cylon, and he...
Okay, well, then we'll take an example from gaming that most experienced gamers are used to. If you've ever played Call of Cthulhu, then you know that if you create a character who starts with a SAN of 75, your character is probably not going to have a SAN of 75 for very long if the character is played properly in a properly run Call of Cthulhu game. In anywhere from one game session to a year, though if you manage to keep a Call of Cthulhu character alive for 1 year, then please write to us at letters@polymancerstudios.com, because we'd really like to know how you pulled that off.
Well, I've heard that it's called life support.
Oh, okay. But sooner or later, your character's SAN is going to go down to something like 30, or even lower. And obviously, that is going to affect your character's outlook on life, your character's perception of reality, your character's ability to relate to other people in the world intelligibly. That's just an extreme example. But if your character does, you know, in a fantasy game, rises in status, in importance, and in power, and then comes to the point where your actions can affect an entire country, then this is going to affect your character's personality. It's going to affect the way your character relates to other people in the game world. It's just going to completely change your way of thinking. So be mindful of this, too, as the game moves along.
Now, a lot of the time, people feel that a character should evolve over time, and as a player, you might want to sort of create ahead of time how your character is going to evolve, especially if you're in a game where you gain levels or you have various professions that you can mix and choose, as in, you know, the Warhammer fantasy roleplay. You have these path progressions that you sort of kind of decide ahead of time. You can sort of tell yourself, well, how is this affecting my character? How's my character changing as my character stats are changing, as my skills are changing? Another important aspect of having a good personality and having your personality evolve over time is how sometimes an enemy you thought you had or a goal you thought your character wanted could all of a sudden be turned against you by the crafty GM who's just there to sadistically hurt your characters emotionally and perhaps even its player's mind. By suddenly turning the situation, turning the tables around you. For instance, the enemy that you've been fighting for so long turns out to be a relative, turns out to be your father, as in the case of Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. Or perhaps you might even have to team yourself up with this person to realize a common goal, like John Crichton and Scorpius in Farscape, and all of a sudden, after being dire enemies for most of the show, end up having to forge an alliance together, and well, they kind of work well together, and that's just adds an extra level of complexity to the character interaction in the story. And as a player, having these sort of challenges can be a lot of fun. And just think about this. If you were playing Farscape and you had a character named John Crichton and you had this enemy named Scorpius, imagine your horror when you wake up realizing you have a copy of this person you absolutely hate implanted in your brain. Would you call it Harvey? Would you call it another name? Would you shoot yourself? Those are all the things that you as a player would have to ask yourself, and your character will evolve. You will evolve a separate, perhaps a different relationship with the fictional enemy that's in your mind as opposed to the real one. And perhaps this is all things that you can explore as part of your character evolution. And those are all plot hooks or plot elements that your GM can add or create to keep the game entertaining. And keeping the game entertaining by allowing you to roleplay your character and allowing you to have your character evolve on a more than just the rules side of things, on a personal level as a character. And those are things that are interesting in a long-term campaign. Now, since we're talking about some TV shows as example, and we didn't mention that a little bit earlier too, one of the things that make TV shows so appealing is that there is something called a cast. And I guess if we can remember all these examples, we mentioned Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, we mentioned Farscape. The reason why we remember these examples is because they're memorable, of course. And the reason why they're memorable is because there was some kind of an interaction between the cast members. Whether they are good, whether they are evil, whether they are the heroes or the villains, this interaction between the heroes, between the villains themselves, between the various factions in the storyline, and of course in the campaign, this is what makes it interesting. And in that case, one thing that you should do when you're creating your characters is not focus on creating a party, as in you're a fighter, you're a cleric, the cleric heals the fighter kills the bad guys, and make sure the cleric doesn't get killed. Well, that's very good. This is all functional. But creating a cast, how these characters interact with each other, that's what's interesting, isn't it?
Right. Basically, the difference between a cast and a party is like this. A party is just a collection of people who are adventuring together. If you ever wondered, why is this thief, this fighter, and this cleric, and this magic user, why are they deciding to venture together into deep caverns to kill monsters and take their stuff? That's because there's no reason for them really to be together. They're together just for the purposes of a game. That's called an adventuring party. A cast is something that's greater than that. At the risk of using a well-worn cliche here, it's a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. And what makes it greater than the sum of its parts, or what makes it a cast bigger than the individual characters that are in it, are the relationships between the characters. This is why whenever a writer comes to us to pitch a story to us for Polygraph, we always tell them, we need the list of characters, you need to annotate the list of characters, not only for the role that they play in the story, but for the relationship that they have with other characters in the story. This is how we judge a proposed story to decide whether or not it's been written in an integrated way. And by the same token, in a role-playing game, the various people who are adventuring together, who are going on investigations together, who are doing things together that player characters do. It's the various ways that the individual personalities and motivations of the individual characters in the group fit together and interact with one another, or are expected to interact with one another, that create the drama that makes role-playing so great, and that indeed make a good fictional story so great, that drive a plot. The plot isn't just something involving the game master saying, okay, who are you going to kill this week? What are you investigating now? What's going to destroy the world, and how are you going to save it? Of course, that's all very important stuff. You got to roll your dice, you got to earn your XP and kill things. On the other hand, the various evolving relationships between the characters, and like I said before, these things can change over time, they can evolve, do make the difference between a party and a cast. A good exercise for this, and this is something that written fiction doesn't always handle very well because there's so much imagery in the writing. take a look at one of your favorite TV shows. Like you mentioned Farscape, the various characters in that cast do relate to each other in predictable ways throughout the show, which does change from season to season. The same thing happened in Firefly, which didn't change from season to season because there was only one season. But various characters in that cast did have predictable ways. You know, you see, you know, Simon is in the same room as Jane. You know that there's going to be something snarky or some bullying going on. Then as soon as Mal steps into the room, well, Jane is going to shrink into the corner. If you can have that kind of predictable, or not necessarily predictable, but that kind of routine interaction between players in your game, then you have more than a party. You actually have a cast.
The other thing, too, is as players, you might want to define how this cast is going to work. And you mentioned Firefly, and we should probably maybe look at the way the cast on Firefly, I'm not saying the actors, I'm just saying the cast of characters on Firefly, is really different from the cast of character from Star Trek. When you look at the two, I mean, essentially, they do the same thing, right? They travel around space, they go to places, they have adventures, but there is a big difference in the way that the cast of Firefly operates and the cast of Star Trek operates. And, of course, just like any RPG game that you're having, you have to have a reason why you're all adventuring together. You have to have a reason why you're up together. In Star Trek, it's easy, right? You're a part of Federation, you're part of the ship, it's your job. You go to boldly go and explore brave new worlds. In Firefly, where it's a bunch of characters that sort of get together, they all have their own storylines, they all have their reasons why they're either fleeing the law or they're outside of this. There's a reason why they're stick together. I mean, first of all, they have to be on the ship, they have to travel there, they work doing their part on that ship. But in the two examples, they're essentially doing the same thing, but because of the way the characters operate, they won't react the same way as a group because of the way they're constituted in one example versus the other. In Star Trek, it's very orderly. It's very, they have prime directives. They do things by the book. And of course, you know, in D&D, you call this alignment. Perhaps Firefly in a D&D setting, well, I guess you could call them lawful, but I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, they'll have a little bit of chaos in there. Obviously, they all have their own plot. They sometimes backstab each other, something you wouldn't see on Star Trek, unless it's a red shirt. In which case, he would just get backstabbed and written off the story anyway. But in Firefly, the characters all have their own motivations. Just like in Farscape, the characters having their own motivation. And eventually, while Firefly, if you want to compare the cast of Firefly to the cast of Farscape, you could say to some extent that the cast of Farscape ends up forming more of a tighter group than maybe the cast of Firefly, which is still, they're doing their things even in the movie, but it's unfortunate they only had like one season to express themselves. But even in the movie, you can still see that they are quite happy to move on their separate ways. It's not a very solid group of people that just, they're sort of stuck with each other because of their needs to basically go from point A to point B, avoiding the authorities or whatever reason is. But you sort of see, I guess, through all these ramblings, how you slowly create a cast that is slightly different. The cast itself becomes a character, and how the characters interact with each other and the way that the characters have to be. Like, for instance, you wouldn't have Jane on Star Trek. That would be dangerous. But you can sort of see how, like, you have, like, if you create the characters and the particular types of characters that form a particular type of party, how this party can sort of react as a group and do things as a group that would be very different if the characters composing this party were different in terms of personality, in terms of the way they see you, in terms of their outlook.
I'll give you an example from my own gaming experience. It was a two-person venturing party in a D&D 2nd edition game. The other player wanted to play a paladin. I wanted to play a bard. It's not so easy to figure why those two would adventure together, but then the dungeon master just quipped, okay, so we've got brave Sir Robin and his minstrel. And right there and then, we didn't really have to write anything down. At that point, we knew exactly how our characters would relate with one another, what kind of banter we would have, and just the general flavor and humorous tone of the adventures as we moved along.
So, were you the paladin or the minstrel?
I was the minstrel.
Uh-huh. So, did the paladin, like, boss you around or something?
No, the paladin was very frustrated when I wasn't always there and when he needed me, though.
Before we move on, here's a word from some of our fellow podcasters.
Come listen to WapCaplets at WapCaplets.net, a gaming podcast where you're in and out in 5 minutes.
Okay, Mags, you know about the reviews, interviews, news, and discussions that we have here on All Games Considered. But before you join up, we should tell you about the curse.
Wait, what?
Yeah, what's this about?
The co-host curse. I mean, you know, first there was just Mike and his bizarre gardening accident. Poor
bizarre
guy.
Bizarre gardening.
And then there was the first Chris. He choked on...
Mark, what does this have to do with anything?
Well, you guys are going through co-host at an alarming rate.
And it's not going to get better if Mark keeps scaring them away.
All Games Considered, featuring news and conversations about all aspects of tabletop gaming, is a proud member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network.
Start your journey at www.agcpodcast.info.
Let me guess, the second Chris spontaneously combusted during a recording, right?
Yeah, how did you know?
This is Karkercast, the Gnome Barbarian. Or at least I was until 4th edition came along. And now there's no more gnome playable characters. And there's no more barbarian playable characters. So I'm sticking with the 3.5 set of rules, thank you very much. And that's why I listen to 3.5's Private Sanctuary. Available at www.35privatesanctuary.com.
In a perfect world, wars are fought with miniatures, arguments are settled with dice, and life is all that stuff you do when you're not gaming. The world is not perfect. The Escapist Cast is the official podcast of TheEscapist.com and features discussions on role-playing advocacy, exploring the myths and misconceptions about tabletop RPG and LARP, improving public image and understanding of the hobby, and putting our passion for the game to good use towards improving the world around us. Discover the reality of fantasy games at TheEscapist.com/EscapistCast.
If you like this show, come on over to RPGPodcasts.com, where you'll find dozens more great role-playing podcasts.
All right, and just before we continue on with our podcast, we have this amazing announcement straight from Wizard of the Coast. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
That's right. People who are interested in publishing compatible material for Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition have been waiting for revisions to the GSL, the game system license, since August.
And what we have here is official words from Wizard of the Coast about it, and this is an exclusive to Dicecast, and I guess we can just roll their announcement. Well, that's certainly outstanding in the field. I guess this is straight from the people who brought you the GSL Mark I.
That's right, and you will get more information from Wizards of the Coast about updates to the game system's license in future episodes of Dicecast.
There's a lot of things that could be said about creating characters and creating a cast of characters for your campaign. I mean, we touched a lot of the stuff here, but we could go on for hours, right?
Oh, sure. Basically, the best way to sum up everything that we've said here is first you need to come up with your archetype. After you've created your archetype, you need to decide what your character's basic motivations are, where the character came from, how he became what he is. Then you go through the actual rules mechanics of generating your character. Once that's over, you fill in what's left of the story now that you have something that needs to be explained. Keep your character's personality in mind and try to develop an identifiable, distinctive personality for your character. Leave room in there for development over the life of the campaign. Maybe even predict how your character's personality and relationships with others will change over time. The GM has a part in this too. Think of the group of player characters not as a party, but as a cast, as a group of people who have identifiable relationships over time.
Now, that pretty much sums up what we've discussed so far, but I've noticed there's one thing that we just haven't actually talked about. What name do you give your character? And I think that's kind of like an important point, right? I mean, Your character should have a name.
Well, sure. The type of name that your character is going to have is going to be tied with the setting and the various cultures that exist in the setting. You can fuddle with this a little bit if the game is less serious than others, and
You don't want to have, like, a name that is so completely ridiculous that
no one will take it seriously.
Yeah.
We were in a Vampire Dark Ages game where one guy named his character William Anderson. Every time he mentioned his character's name, there were Mr. Anderson, you know, like straight out of the Matrix. Everybody was doing their Agent Smith impression. Use a name that's distinctive and that's easy for the game master to remember, because especially if there are a lot of people in your party or cast or whatever you want to call it, that will be helpful. The name doesn't have to be too descriptive in a very realistic type of game. It's just a name. On the other hand, in fantasy games and in games that are a little bit more allegorical, you could choose a name that at least somewhat reflects your character's personality. But again, as long as it isn't the sort of name that makes people laugh. I think that's pretty much it.
Greetings all! Polymancer Studios is pleased to promote its newest imprint called Forthright, F-O-U-R-T-H-R-I-G-H-T. The Forthright product line is intended to promote and support D&D 4th Edition, the best-selling and best-known RPG system on the market today. Products in this line will be available presently. Look for our exciting supplements, settings, and adventures at your local retailer or on the internet. We are always looking for freelancers, and if you are interested in contributing to the Forthright product line, please send an email to forthright@polymancerstudios.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Greetings again. Polymancer Studios is pleased to announce the upcoming release of its new RPG rules system. This is a long-term project for both our staff writers and prospective freelancers. Please note that this project falls under the category of works for hire. The new rule system is fully adaptable to any genre or setting you may use. It is a unique take on how the mechanics, rules, and characters interact and interrelate. With this new system, we decided to break with tradition and what has become the standard for rules for so long, since we felt the game-playing public wanted flexibility, scalability, and enjoyment built right into the rules. We are looking for freelance writers to help us produce material for this new product line. Writers should have the following qualities: the ability to express, with the written word, what their mind's eye sees. The ability to both work independently and under the supervision of a project manager online, as well as possessing a good work ethic and a strong respect for deadlines. Any interested writers should send an email to projects@polymancerstudios.com.
Well, that's all the time we had for this segment. You can find out more about who we are and what we do at our website, www.polymancerstudios.com. or send an email to dicecast@polymancerstudios.com. The music for this segment, Fort Minor, Remember the Name, BYFH Remix by Chojin, Violated by Technetium, Industrial March Beat, and Triple Layer Guitar in E by Neurowax are released under the Creative Commons license. This podcast is copyright 2008 Polymancer Studios Incorporated, released under the Creative Commons license, available at creativecommons.org. Polymancer is a registered trademark of Polymancer Studios Incorporated. Thank you for listening to the Dicecast.